Welcome to A Sacred Fellowship. This is episode 72, where your hosts, Catherine Olson and Lorianne Schwenk, will be discussing the fifth chapter in the War of the Ring, the Rite of the Rohirrim, through the theme of resistance. On our podcast, we are using sacred practices to read the works of J.R.R. Tolkien. We are using these texts to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions.
Roll up in a blanket on the ground or relax in your car and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred. And we are glad you're here to continue building community with us. In fact, I think we have some new listeners today. We believe that by treating classics like the Lord of the Rings as sacred, we will learn to treat one another as sacred.
We are recording during Hobbit Week, close to September 22nd, and we'd like to do something special. This time we have a special reading to start the episode. Since we meet some Moses in this chapter, we would like to share a story by Tolkien included in Unfinished Tales, The Faithful Stone.
On a time, there was a Drug named Agan, well known as a leech. He had a great friendship with Barach, a forester of the folk, who lived in a house in the woods 2 miles or more from the nearest village. The dwellings of Agan's family were nearer, and he spent most of his time with Barach and his wife, and was much loved by their children.
There came a time of trouble, for a number of daring orcs had secretly entered the woods nearby, and were scattered in twos and threes, waylaying any that went abroad alone, and at night attacking houses far from neighbors. The household of Barach were not much afraid, for Agan stayed with them at night and kept watch outside. But one morning he came to Barach and said,
"Friend, I have ill news from my kin, and I fear I must leave you a while. My brother has been wounded, and he lies now in pain and calls for me, since I have skill in treating orc wounds. I will return as soon as I may." Barach was greatly troubled, and his wife and children wept. But Agan said, "I will do what I can. I have had a watch stone brought here and set near your house."
Barach went out with Agan and looked at the watch stone. It was large and heavy and sat under some bushes not far from his doors. Agan laid his hand upon it and after a silence said,
"See, I have left with it some of my powers. May it keep you from harm." Nothing untoward happened for 2 nights, but on the third night, Barach heard the shrill warning call of the droogs, or dreamed that he heard it, for it roused no one else. Leaving his bed, he took his bow from the wall and went to a narrow window, and he saw 2 orcs setting fuel against his house and preparing to kindle it.
Then Barach was shaken with fear, for the marauding orcs carried with them brimstone or some other devilish stuff that was quickly inflamed and not quenched with water. Recovering himself, he bent his bow, but at that moment, just as the flames leapt up, he saw a Drug coming, running up behind the orcs. One he felled with the bow of his fist, and the other fled. Then he plunged barefoot into the fire, scattering the burning fuel and stamping on the orc flames that ran along the ground. Barach made for the doors, but when he had unbarred them and sprang out, the Drug had disappeared. There was no sign of the smitten orc. The fire was dead, and there was remained only a smoke and a stench.
Barach went back indoors to comfort his family, who had been roused by the noises and the burning reek. But when it was daylight, he went out again and looked about. He found that the watchstone had gone, but he kept that to himself.
"Tonight it must be the watchman," he thought, but later in the day, Agan came back and was welcomed with joy. He was wearing high buskins, such as the Drugs sometimes wore in hard country, among thorn or rocks, and he was weary. But he was smiling and seemed pleased, and he said,
"I bring good news. My brother is no longer in pain and will not die, for I came in time to withstand the venom. And now I learn that the marauders have been slain or else fled. How have you fared?
We are still alive, said Barak, but come with me and I will show you and tell you more. Then he led Agon to the place of the fire and told him of the attack in the night. The watchstone has gone, orc work, I guess. What have you to say to that?
I will speak when I have looked and thought longer, said Agon. And then he went hither and thither, scanning the ground, and Barak followed him. At length, Agon led him to a thicket at the edge of the clearing in which the house stood. There, the watchstone was, sitting on a dead orc. But its legs were all blackened and cracked, and one of its feet had split off and lay loose at its side. Agon looked grieved, but he said, "Ah, well, he did what he could, and better that his legs should trample orc fire than mine."
Then he sat down and unlaced his buskets, and Barak saw that under them there were bandages on his legs. Agon undid them.
"They are healing already," he said. "I had kept vigil by my brother for 2 nights, and last night I slept. I woke before morning came, and I was in pain, and found my legs blistered. Then I guessed what had happened. Alas, if some power passes from you to a thing that you have made, then you must share in its hurts." Hello, Catherine.
Hello, and thank you for that thought-provoking introduction.
Well, I love that story so much, and I know there are wonderful things we could have quoted from the chapter, but mm-hmm. I thought this was a special story, and I was so curious about the Woses and the Druidine and the middle men mm-hmm. and all of that, that I just yes. wanted to do a little more research, so mm-hmm. I had to do that. Do you have a tower or a dungeon for us this week?
So my tower and my dungeon go kind of hand in hand. So I have a friend who, she and her parents all have COVID right now, and they've been having COVID pneumonia, and she is out of the hospital now after 3 days, but her parents are not doing very well. And so they are still much in my thoughts and prayers, and I put them on the prayer rolls at church, but I'm just, it's very, very hard to see entire families being impacted by one breakout case or breakthrough, rather.
Absolutely. It's devastating, heartbreaking. And I hope everyone listening will do what they can to prevent by getting a vaccine. So mm-hmm.
do you have a tower? They were all vaccinated.
They are vaccinated. I hope that helps them.
Well, my tower has to be that I am so looking forward to my trip to Florida and on a cruise, but especially to Legoland, where I'm going to be going and staying in a pirate-themed hotel. So I found myself a pirate shirt, and my friend has said that I can borrow her pirate hat. So while I am much older than the kids that I will be accompanying, I will still have fun.
Oh, the kid at heart can always have fun at Legoland. And of course, mm-hmm. I heard the first 6 letters and was thinking, Legolas?
That is what my phone tried to autocorrect it to.
Isn't that wonderful when our phones know where our hearts lie? Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, my dungeon seems very silly in comparison, and I'm sorry in advance, but the tower is that I knew that on September 16th at midnight, the Andy Serkis audiobooks for Lord of the Rings would be available. And so at 9 o'clock Pacific time, I checked, and there they were. So I got them. So that's
and my so did tower. I.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm so happy. And it's wonderful. And then my dungeon is actually, I'm learning so much that I'm going to have to re-listen with a book and take notes, because driving in the car, I'm going insane listening, and I'm picking up so much. And I'm so glad he reads every prologue and every bit of this, practically reads the page numbers. It's just fantastic. And he sings, and I love his voices so much. What a gift. So my dungeon is that here I am on my first chance to reread. And it's driving me to distraction because I realized that I'm going to have to reread. But of course, I have the rest of my life. So that's hardly a dungeon. And sorry, doesn't compare, but that's my dungeon tonight. And there we are.
Well, I have to say that I am as well enjoying his renditions of those books. I'm only a few chapters in because I have to ration myself.
I have to work and sleep.
My office lets me listen to music and audiobooks on work shifts, so I get to be lucky.
I couldn't focus. I couldn't do it. Yeah.
My problem is that I'm a Star Wars fan, and of course, Andy Serkis plays Supreme Leader Snoke in episodes 7 and 8, and a little bit in 9. And so every time I hear his Gandalf, it sounds like the grand villain in the sequel trilogy.
Well, and that's a great segue to my story on resistance, because I actually struggled with this theme, which we'll get back to in Havruta, I believe. And because what I decided to focus on, because I struggled with it a little bit, is that anything that you want to do well involves some effort. And it actually involves a little resistance. So, for example, the hairs on a bow actually have tiny, 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 infinitesimal, microscopic little barbs. So they actually catch the violin string as they're passing over it. And a violin string also has some resistance. It has to be tight a certain amount to be the right tone, okay? And a piano, of course, piano strings have to be tight, and they get struck by something, and the string has to resist that strike to create the sound. I am so naive about acoustics and the science of all of that, but I do know that I've even forgotten. Anyway, ohms, I was studying ohms because that's resistance. Anyway, I times R. Anyway, I've learned a lot about resistance because you set this as our theme, and even in singing and so, or speaking, I suppose a voice only has so many options. So a Star Wars character is going to sound like Gandalf, but to sing or speak well, you actually do need some resistance in your vocal cords. Now, not so much that you're straining them, and not so little that you're just whispering or going slack like so many NPR interviewers. So a certain amount of resistance is a good thing. And I'm very excited to see that in the chapter and especially under your leadership.
Well, I'm feeling very called out by the vocal quality analysis.
Well,
I'm sure why I'm hoarse this evening, but it might have something to do with all of the internal screaming I've done at my technology today.
Understood. Well, it's all okay. And the gammers are just twittering with excitement tonight. So is it all right for them to go forward with the...
If you think that there is a pièce de résistance for them to illuminate.
You stole my thunder. Obviously, résistance comes from the French, but goes... And it is a political opposition. So it's a political word or a moral word, taking a stand there. The Latin resistere would be making a stand. It would be an opposing or retarding force. Retarding means to slow down. That's all it means. So, okay, here's the formula. Ohm, electrical. So that is voltage equals I times R. And I is amperes. So anyway, I just throw that out there. Just because I wrote it down doesn't mean I understand it. But the gammers are really good at physics, and they understand all this stuff very much. But at any rate. And then really the only other word that bubbled up for us, I thought I would talk about leech a little bit from our story, because Agon, the character, is a leech. And this is an obscure word for a physician. The old English would be that L A E
C-E, I forget what it means, what the word is when they're elided like that, A-E, L-A-E-C-E. The old Danish has a K, L-A-E-K-E. Proto-Germanic, L-E-K-J-A-Z, Lekjas, Lekjas, which would be an enchanter or one who speaks magic. So Gandalf, in a way, is a leech. Magic words, a healer or a physician. The old Frisian is Letze, old Saxon is Laki, old Norse is Leknir, the Gothic Lekis, physician, one who counsels. Celtic word, there's too many vowels, Leag, I'm not sure, a charmer, an exorcist, or a physician. So you can see how medical care must have seemed just so magical and mystical. The Proto-European is an L-E-P word for a conjurer, from the root L-E-G, similar to religion, to collect, to gather, like ligament, ligature, all of those words, to gather and to speak. And I'm going to take a leap. All of these words with K, Laki, Lekjas, Leke, meaning physician. There is the gospel according to Luke, and Luke is called the physician. Luke is from a Greek root. These words are Germanic. I am wondering if far back they came from some tiny mote of sound that was the same. And I'm just putting that out there. Fight me.
I could, but it would get a lot of Anglo-Saxon root words involved, as well as Greek terms for light. So,
well,
I will leave it at that, because the gammers are often more wise than I am, and I'm just kind of boring.
Well, and this is just fun. I mean, wouldn't it be cool if the root for Luke actually was the same root as for physician? I mean, we have no other evidence that this person is a physician in the Gospels, so it's kind of cool. Anyway.
Now, I was curious about that because I remembered very clearly a reference back in the Two Towers where Theoden is calling Grima Wormtongue out for his
interference.
Yes, leechcraft. And I'm thinking, oh, well, for me, leechcraft has had something invoking the whole bleeding someone to make them feel better. And I did not realize that it was tied to this magic. And so there's this also almost accusation of ensorcelment there rather than him trying to help the king.
But we will see in a few chapters in the Houses of Healing that there is a cry for a leech. The woman is very ill. Please, somebody send for a leech.
Yes. So
how interesting, again, that it's on kind of both sides. Is it positive? Is it negative? Yes, it's both. And I'm sure, well, because physicians, well, let's say, quote, fail, end quote, frequently, people do die, people don't get better every time. So there must be some sense of magic and sorcery and conjuring. And I'm not even calling people primitive who think that way. I still think that way. I still am kind of amazed when someone tries an antidepressant and they feel better, or someone tries an antidepressant after an antidepressant for months and months and months and they don't. So there is still some element of sorcery to it. You can't just look at a person and prescribe a drug in 2021. There is some kind of craft that goes into it. So it is still in that kind of realm of mystery. And it's interesting how much power we still give physicians often, or on the other hand, we fight them tooth and nail. and all of those things. And then they just wanted us, the gammers wanted to make sure we knew a little bit, because we didn't talk about them in the previous chapter with Mary, about the Pukulmen. They were the ancient carved images that lined the road to Dunharrow, the Stair of the Hold in the White Mountains. And one statue was standing in each turn of the winding road. So after we read that story, you understand about these watchstones and the power and magic in them. And the power and magic would have been given them perhaps by the Druiden, the Woses, the wild men of the woods. They are a strange race of men that lived in the Druiden forests. And they are counted among the Edain
And in the first stage, the Duerdane developed a close relationship or a relationship with the folk of Haleth. And Haleth is a woman. So I just call it Haleth. And the people that Barak represents in the story may be the oath breakers, perhaps. They were the long forgotten men of the White Mountains. And these are the middle men. So we know, I don't know all of this entirely, but these are in a way considered the middle men, whereas perhaps men of Numenor would be the higher men.
Well, it's specifically addressed in another place. I'm not sure exactly where, I'd have to look it up, but it's a contrast between the dark men that are referred to and the light men, who are presumably the Numenoreans.
Right. And I couldn't find a backup for that, so I omitted it, but I'm really glad you brought it in because I like that too, and, and all of that. So let's turn to the chapter, and please help us find resistance in the chapter.
Tired as he was, Merry could not sleep. He had ridden now for 4 days on end, and the ever-deepening gloom had slowly weighed down his heart. He began to wonder why he had been so eager to come, when he had been given every excuse, even his lord's command, to stay behind. He wondered, too, if the old king knew that he had been disobeyed and was angry. Perhaps not. There seemed to be some understanding between Dirnhelm and Elfhelm, the marshal who commanded the Eored in which they were riding. He and all his men ignored Merry and pretended not to hear if he spoke. He might have been just another bag that Dirnhelm was carrying.
So tell me about the resistance. Is that an individual, or is that all these men? Or
I think it's kind of a element of both, because we have Merry, who is finding himself almost still caught in this despair of the last chapter, though it was on a completely different level. But on the other hand, he is seeing little purpose in his having been so daring and having resisted what was good sense according to the knowledge of the people who he was serving. And so he is trying to find some kind of purpose, and he is trying to kind of assign himself a place in all of this. And then there is this passive acceptance of this extra warrior. And I love this, because I keep on seeing on various Tolkien groups on Facebook, isn't it funny that people don't question why Dirnhelm is carrying a child on his horse, and him going, no, actually, we don't have any evidence of that, because everyone knows that there's this quote unquote other bag that Dirnhelm might be carrying. And so it's a almost resist. I think everyone in this era is slightly guilty of resisting the king's explicit orders, or seeing wisdom in not taking them as absolute certainty, but they are able to make individual judgments.
Well, remember when everybody was riding before in chapter 3, and Merry would be riding next to Théoden, and he didn't know that people were smiling at that. The men were smiling. So I see their complicitness in this resistance less as guilt and more as raising him up and saying, well, he does have a right to be here, and we'll make it work.
Well, yesterday we were discussing in another group that I do sacred readings with, we were talking about the entirety of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, and the line from Dumbledore that says that it takes a great deal of courage to stand up to one's enemies, but it takes even more to stand up to one's friends. And we decided to discuss this idea of standing up to something or someone, and we decided that it had to involve a sense of moral rightness. And so that is an individual choice and an individual interpretation, which is why I think everyone in this era, and especially Dirnhelm, is having this moment of slight resistance.
Do you think they even know who Dirnhelm is?
I think they do. At least Elfhelm seems to know. I have the feeling that Dirnhelm has ridden with them before, but that's just my fan speculation.
I'll buy that.
How about you? Where's your next example? Or you can precede it if you found something in the first couple of paragraphs. No. I skipped ahead to the third.
No, I didn't. I think it goes to the discussion then with Gunburigan. I love him, the great headman. He's asking the Rohirrim to resist Gorgun and drive away Bad Dark with bright iron, to allow the wild men to go sleep in peace in the woods. So he's asking them to resist. And even in a way, he is resisting them because he's willing to help them. But apparently, because there is something, leave wild men alone in the woods, do not hunt them like beasts anymore. Mm-hmm. He has every right almost to be sending his poison darts their way. So he's resisting what may be his community's sense of justice to a larger peace. And that's why resistance is so important in doing something well. He is resisting maybe what would be the obvious, good job, Gunburigan, and doing this greater thing of helping the Rohirrim. And all he's asking is just stop hunting us. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not asking for a piece of land. He's not asking for any greater stature, nothing. Just stop hunting us. So I just really touched by that. Any more on that, or what was your next place?
I was trying to find where they talked about the bright iron to see if that was something before or after what my next place had been. Mm-hmm. Just a moment.
Well, I'll share kind of my next. Just a sense of nature resisting. Gunburigan says, it is all dark, but it is not all night. When sun comes, we feel her, even when she is hidden. So the sun is able to resist this black cloud sent by Sauron.
Sorry, I've got like seven different places where I highlighted Gunburigan's thing, and I don't know what the actual proper pronunciation is because I haven't gotten to Andy Serkis reading that yet.
Well, I'm decided, so we're going to go with that for tonight now.
Anyway. I'm like, it's Gunburigan, which seems like something out of Lloyd Alexander. Sorry, I'm going to stop looking for that and just get on with it.
Okay,
there we go. Okay, sorry, you did quote the part that I was going to read next, the part you said when sun comes we feel her even when she is hidden, but it says it is the opening of the day in the sky field, and Éomer responds, then we must set out as soon as may be. Mm-hmm. Even so, we cannot hope to come to Gondor's aid today. And so it's a sense of the futility of making such a prolonged effort on this particular day, but it's doing what they can. And that's really a theme in this chapter, both with Éomer and with Gunburigan, where they do not entirely see that it will do something good or that it will have a positive outcome, but they are willing to do it because of the possibility of things being more beneficial for others. So I do like that.
Mm-hmm. I do as well.
I like this part that it is talking about the eastward side of Amundine and masking the great gap in the line of the hills that ran from Nardole to Dean that ran east and west. Through the gap, the forgotten Wayne Road long ago had run down back into the main horseway from the city through Andorian. But now for many lives of men, trees had had their way with it. Mm-hmm. And it had vanished, broken and buried under the leaves of uncounted years. But the thickets offered to the riders their last hope of cover before they went into open battle. For beyond them lay the road and the plains of Anduin. While east and southwards, the slopes were bare and rocky as the writhen hills gathered themselves together and climbed up bastion upon bastion into the great mass and shoulders of Min Doluin. And it almost, there's this almost personification of this entire vale and the area in which it is determinedly doing what is not expected of us, which is providing cover and protection and a way for people to accomplish extraordinary purposes, but it's just a mountain sitting there and with various rocks and things. But it seems like Tolkien makes it into a very intentional state of existence. And well, I don't know if that's completely reaching for something that's not there.
No, he's done it before and he'll do it again. So I love that. This is beautiful. But what I also see here, and what I see here as well, is nature resisting human reshaping. Mm-hmm. So at some point there was a wide road for wagons and four horses wide and all of that. And then, you know, the trees have kind of reclaimed it. So the trees have resisted, but nature has resisted humanity here and the shaping. And we would all do well to remember that that nature will win. Dams will break, Rockies will crumble, Gibraltar will tumble. They're only made of clay. Anyway.
Oh, I love that song.
Yes, yes, I do too.
Because after all, our love is here to stay. Don't think I've ever had an Ella Fitzgerald Tolkien insertion before.
There we go. There we go. But then we have, again, from Gunn, Bergan, kill Gorgun, kill orc folk. No other words, please, wild men. Drive away bad air and darkness with bright iron. So again, calling on them to resist.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. What was next for you?
Okay, so Elfhelm returns later, and he says that the scouts have found not to report beyond the Grey Wood. He said, save only two dead men and two dead horses. Mm. Well, said Eomer, what of it? This lord, there were errand riders of Gondor. Hirgon was one, maybe. At least his hand still clasped the red arrow, but his head was hewn off, and this also. It would seem by the signs that they were fleeing westward when they fell. As I read it, they found the enemy already on the outwall or assailing it when they returned, and that would be two nights ago, if they used fresh horses from the post, as is their wont. They could not reach the city and turned back. Alas, said Théoden, then Denethor has heard no news of our riding and will despair of our coming. Mm. Need brooks no delay, yet late is better than never, said Éomer. And mayhap in this time shall the old saw be proved truer than ever since men spoke with mouths. So I see two places in this where resistance kind of it takes its form. First of all, we have Hirgon and the unnamed other rider and their two horses.
Never named.
It's suspected that they have turned away from the field of battle when they were unable to deliver their messages or to bring news to Denethor. Mm-hmm. And I see this not as any sign of cowardice or any sign of giving up the thing. It is an action in which they see that the better path and the greater good can be done by returning and giving news of what has been witnessed. And so this is where they saw duty before anything else and had love for their duty. So they turned their backs momentarily on the Minas Tirith in order to prepare those who were going to be coming to Minas Tirith. Mm. And Théoden is writing against this, knowing that the city is not looking for him, that they will not send any kind of reinforcements. There will not be any preparation for them. But nevertheless, what he is doing is to ride to the aid of those who have no expectation of it. And honestly, I think that's a wonderful kind of courage.
It is. It is. Oh, my. And then we see Durnhelm had left his place, and then the darkness was moving steadily forward until at last he was riding just in rear of the king's guard. So that means Durnhelm and Merry, so the two resistors are now, I mean, they're not even hiding. They're just right up front. So they're right behind the king. So I love that. I love that. And I just love later on, it's not resistance, but when Théoden refers to Amer as his son, I just love mm-hmm. that. That is beautiful. But then he says, forth now and fear no darkness. So there's a start there to resisting, again, there, resisting this evil from Sauron.
Well, this is almost a phrasing of this, something from Bilbo's poetry, where he says that foes and fire are before you and your home's far behind. And it reminds me of the poetry that says that home is behind and the world is ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And so we have, in that part of the poetry, it sounds more like a call to look for the greater adventure in things, mm-hmm. to understand things beyond our borders. And this, they understand too well what is far away from their homes, and they are riding towards it mm-hmm. instead of away from it. But I love, and we skipped this in quote because, just we can't use everything, but I'm going to use it anyway.
Go for it.
Oaths you have taken, now fulfill them all to Lord and Land and League of Friendship. Men clash spear upon shield. Well, I love that. Sorry, ahead. Just go ahead.
Well, I love that, but I love this. Arise, arise, riders of Théoden, fell deeds awake, fire and slaughter. Spear shall be shaken, shield shall be splintered, a sword day, a red day, ere the sun rises. Ride now, ride now, ride to Gondor. A red day. Oof. But right before that is the mention of the wind changing.
Yes.
And so I see now this sense of, the greater nature, that power of nature, the Gaia, the earth. I wouldn't know which Valar to name, but that somebody greater than just these creatures on the ground is fighting back to here and resisting. The wind is changing, and I love it.
Well, in the part that you just quoted, which mm-hmm. is another favorite part and has a wonderful soundtrack to it, but the first two lines are this wonderful call to action, and the one that really strikes me is the fell deeds awake, fire and slaughter, because he is commanding them to bring the threat upon themselves. And this is another moment where he is trying to divert the evil of the foe so that it turns away from Minas Tirith and goes for them, so that they can better ride to the need of those who are in this League of Friendship that he mentions earlier.
So there's some resistance there too. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, my. Did you have anything else in the chapter?
Again, this is another moment where, honestly, it feels a little bit like Pippin and Aragorn and Frodo. I don't think there are many characters in the Fellowship who do not have these moments. But the leading company rode off as swiftly as they could, for it was still steep, deep dark, whatever mm-hmm. changed Widfara might forebode.
Mm-hmm.
Merry was riding behind Durnhelm, clutching with the left hand, while the other he tried to loosen his sword in his sheath. Yes. He felt now bitterly the truth of the old king's words. In such a battle, what would you do, Merry Adok? Just this, he thought, encumber a rider, and hope at best to stay in my seat and not be pounded to death by galloping hoofs. And the last line is a little bit sardonic, but he is, as a good servant of King Théoden, expecting himself to take better action than what he has done before. And this really comes not long before that charge to Feldig's mm-hmm. Awake of Fire and Slaughter. And so he is looking for another way to fulfill his purpose as the king's servant, as his esquire, and is not letting himself rest because he has not yet answered that question.
Right, right. And even earlier when he, feels some great weight of dread on him, waiting was unbearable. He longed to know what was going to happen, but he continues to go forward. He could at any moment sort of quit and have been true to Théoden instead of resisting Théoden, but he is continuing to resist Théoden by being loyal to him. And I love it. I love it. And I just had one more, and it's subtle, from the wild man. He says, "Dead men are not friends to living men, and give them no gifts," said the wild man. "But if you live after the darkness, then leave wild men alone in the woods." Mm-hmm. And Gumbarigan is using an epithet that other men use to describe him. And I won't give an example. But I just see that as a kind of resistance, like, yeah, you call us the wild men. Just leave us alone. You know, so I just see that as great. I'll use that word for myself, and maybe you'll see. Maybe you'll see kind of. So I like that. He's kind of calling them out just a little bit in that moment. Just leave mm-hmm. wild men alone. I think of Muhammad Ali and what he said about when he didn't want to go to Vietnam. Anyway.
I'm not familiar with this, actually.
Well, he said no North Vietnamese had ever called him a wild man.
Hmm.
And you substitute the right word for wild man, and we'll go, yeah, now you know what I mean. So,
yes, and here I was thinking of Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas, but completely different. How about that?
There we are. Yes. Yes. All right. Well, this was a shorter chapter, and we got through our theme. And do you have a sacred question for us from Havruta?
So why do you think in this chapter that resistance is an appropriate theme for it?
And I am dying to hear your answer.
Well, for me, it is because really resistance is something that is meant to be counterintuitive or counter something. It is something where you are taking action against a power in the opposite direction. And so I think that is something that is in 90% of the paragraphs in this chapter, whether it is Mariotica deciding to defy kind of his oaths to Théoden, where mm-hmm. whether it's the Aered refusing to do what they should do in terms of this stowaway in their company, whether it's mm-hmm. Gonvarigon taking ownership of the ways in which he might be viewed or exploited. But mm-hmm. there are so many ways in which there is resistance. And I remember that at the end of the chapter, it says, this mm-hmm. is talking about Théoden Fehi seemed, or mm-hmm. the battle fury of his fathers ran like new fire in his veins. Fehi seemed, I already read that moment, but lo, it shone like an image of the sun, and the grass flamed into green about the white feet mm-hmm. of his steed, for morning came, morning into wind from the sea, and darkness was removed. Yeah. And the hosts of Mordor wailed, and terror took them, and they fled and died, and the hoofs of wrath rode over them. So the entire chapter, if it did, should be summed up, is that when the righteous resistance is exercised, it can cause evil to flee.
Mm. Thank you.
What is your answer?
Well, my answer starts with saying that I struggled with it, and so I resisted it. And at one point I was almost even going to ask you to change the theme and I never got around to it. So then I thought, all right, girl, tie yourself down to your desk, open your book and find it. And so my answer is that what my answer came from finding instances of resistance that are not, just negative, and not that I thought they always were, but that's why I was looking at musical things or energy or things like that, where resistance actually contains a power. And so I think it is this, here I'm talking about a bow, like a bow and arrow. The whole chapter is about a bowstring being pulled tighter and tighter and tighter. And what more eloquent image of resistance is there? And right at the end, the arrow is released. And it's the whole army here, the whole host here. So thank you for the exercise. And I was wondering, does this relate to anything also, like in your experience, that where you felt like you had to resist something for the good, if you want to answer or not?
You can just say yes and move on.
Oh, that's a really hard question to think of an actual...
I shouldn't spring it on you. We can take that.
No, actually, I have a completely relevant point, and I will say that this is possibly just something that may not sit well with some of our listeners or any people. I'm not claiming it'll target any one group, but it's an experience from my high school. So as I've mentioned before, I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormons, and I went to an evangelical Christian high school for my last 2 years of high school. And most of the time I did not have problems with people and their perceptions of how Mormons were. Sometimes I would get funny questions, such as when they read Sherlock Holmes and wanted to know if I was really a cannibal, like the people in this story that study in Scarlet. Or they would have questions about things that they believed it meant that I was going to hell. Mm-hmm. At one point, I ran for a student body office. There, in my choir, we had a chaplain position for the students. And I had quite a number of people encouraging me to run for this office. But the headmaster called me in and he said that he would have to disqualify me from running if I chose to run, because I did not believe in Christianity as he defined it. And I chose to go along with his thing because I really didn't feel like I would be a good example by resisting this. But for the next year, I was trying to leave my mark on my fellow students without ever having a formal calling to do so. And I was looking at my yearbook a couple of years ago when preparing to speak in church about my experience in informal missionary work. And I had so many inscriptions from friends who were talking about my efforts to show them the love of Christ while they believed that I did not necessarily believe in Christ. And for me, that was a lot more rewarding than anything on my school transcript saying that I was a choir chaplain for a year. So that's my one little story of resistance, and I hope it doesn't offend the people who may have those feelings towards my sect of religion. But, you know, that's the one thing that I can say. I really felt like I did a good type of resistance.
Good, good. I just get stuck on feeling like Mary, as in like a piece of baggage that's in the way. And I don't know if I've ever done anything. I'd have to think harder, but I don't know if I'm brave enough. I don't know if I'm even brave enough to be Mary. So bless him.
We might have to discuss all of this in Notes from the Shire.
right. Anyway, do you have any exhortations for characters?
Oh, I would exhort the people of Rohan to consider wisely what they think to be wild and to revise. Mm-hmm. That having learned the lesson that they have in this chapter and knowing the allegiance and the alliance that they were able to form and still using it for the future going forward.
I love that. Wonderful. And I just want to send word to the people in Gondor. Yes, they're coming. Yes, they're coming. I just, you know, this is all interlaced with the previous chapter. This is not movement forward in time. And so this is the ultimate despair. And I think, you know, and it's awesome because you've got kind of these two groups of people, Rohirrim and Gondor, you know, okay. But you have on the personal level, well, you have the two leaders, Théoden and Denethor, but you have Merry and Pippin. Mm-hmm. Merry is so worried about Pippin, and Pippin misses Merry so much. And so I just want to throw that strength to the people of Gondor. Just a few minutes more, just a few minutes more. I promise they're coming. I promise. Hold that out.
I don't know if you're familiar with the songwriter and lyricist Michael McLean. He talks about people who are going through times of despair, and he references the Holy Week, and he mm-hmm. says that it's not hopeless, it's just Friday and Sunday's coming soon, meaning in this time of ultimate darkness, we know that there are brighter times coming.
Desolation is not a destination.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, wonderful. Oh my goodness. Well, join us please next week when we get to chapter 6 of War of the Ring, the Battles of the Pelennor Fields. Ah, and I still haven't seen the movie. Okay, through the theme of identity, which Catherine picked basically when we started this book, I mean the whole book, so back in the Shire, she said, you know, there's a chapter we're going to do identity, and here we go.
Actually, it was further back than that. This was okay. When I was talking about the unexpected party in The Hobbit. And trying to find a theme for the first chapter of this entire project. And I said, when we get to the Pelennor Fields, we are talking about identity.
When we get to the who's what, what? And here we are. Here we come to the Battles of the Pelennor Fields through the theme of identity. We will continue with the sacred practice of Havruta.
Oh, unfortunately, because like I said, I have been internally screaming at my technology today. I have not yet looked for a note from the Shire, but we love hearing from you and all of our community, which is growing stronger every day. If you'd like to join our Facebook community, look for A Sacred Fellowship. On Twitter, we are A Sacred Fellows 1, and Instagram is A Sacred Fellowship. You can also send an email to asacredfellowship@gmail.com. Thanks to all of you for keeping our spirits up and our thoughts flowing. Please read and comment on Second Breakfast at our website, www.asacredfellowship.com.
We also value the contributions of our Patreon supporters. Your support of the site and hosting costs is much appreciated. If you feel inspired to join their ranks, please look at our options on www.patreon.com/asacredfellowship. Perks have ranged from patron shoutouts to Tolkien-themed presents. We appreciate every dollar, and we've got a special perk coming up. We will be recording both cabinet battles from Hamilton. Oh, yes, we will.
Because Lorianne, in her great wisdom, decided we should each have a turn being Hamilton.
Right. So why not do them both? And you can only hear that through our Patreon feed. So... Mm-hmm. please sign up for that. And believe me, every dollar is so appreciated. It costs a bit to run this, as much fun and love as we have for this project. So we appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like we have come to the end, since I have not been able to look up the note from the Shire, and I apologize for leaving the mailbox full for now.
Well, we will accept your apology, but next week you're going to do all the September birthdays.
Yes, I am. And then we hope that you will join us, even though we forgot to read whatever you sent in to us. And we will be back next week. We will look forward to discussing this between ourselves and with you in the Facebook group or anywhere else you choose to join us. For now, may Elmbereth protect you. Be of good hope. Namarie.
Namarie.